This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're joined right now by Mark Bullock, one of the best covering the Washington Commanders. You can check out his film breakdowns at markbullock.substack.com. Give him a follow on the X app at Mark Bullock NFL. Mark, one thing that I've said with Jaden Daniels this year, and I don't say it as a disservice to Daniels, but more of a compliment to Cliff Kingsbury. For all of the hoopla we've heard over the past week about this offense regressing, and I think, you know, a lot of folks like yourself have debunked that here over the past 48 hours or so, I think he just deserves a ton of credit, you know, for what he has done to mesh the stuff he likes with what Jaden likes. When you look at from watching it on tape, the relationship that those two have and how comfortable he has made Jaden and how quarterback friendly this scheme is, has it surprised you in any way, kind of how they've been able to, you know, hit the ground running, so much so that we're panicking right now over, you know, two games against two really good defenses?
Yeah, it has surprised me. I think just the amount that the command that Jaden has of the system, yeah, of being able to do so much at the line of scrimmage is impressive for a rookie quarterback. Yeah. But to do so much out of the no huddle and the amount of the playbook they're able to get to from the no huddle, it's essentially able to call the entire playbook from the no huddle. It's almost unprecedented. Yeah. And it's a real fun thing to watch. It's surprising to see them almost never huddle and still be able to get to everything they want to get to, and that speaks to how well Jaden has learned the system and the command of it, being able to trust him to get everyone lined up and get everyone on the same page without having to get in the huddle and call the kind of 10 to 15 word play calls that you see in every other system. For him to just make a few hand signals and get everyone lined up and ready to go in a few seconds, it's incredibly impressive. And I think you can see the relationship that those two, the Cliff and Jaden, have managed to develop in how confident Jaden is in being able to change plays and at the line of scrimmage. And you quite often will see him check into things and, you know, sometimes it will be the shots down the field and you know, the game-winning touchdown against the Bengals, I think it was one that he checked into. The touchdown before the half against the Giants, that I think it was, that the fade to Terry McLaurin was one that he checked into. And even the run against the Steelers, I think, last week when Brian Robinson pounded one in from a few yards out. Or that might have even been against Philly this week. That was one that Jaden Daniels checked into. So
it's impressive stuff.
Yeah, it's incredibly impressive, and it's not something that a lot of rookie quarterbacks would be trusted to do. Yeah. But clearly, clearly, A, that Jaden has learned the system and understands when to check into things, that he has earned the trust. But it's also a credit to Cliff for giving him that trust, because there's a lot of coaches in this league that would have the ego of saying, I'm the play caller.
Yeah.
Stick with my plays. Don't mess up with what I'm calling. But credit to Cliff, he's saying, hey, I trust you. You clearly have a good grasp of this. And if you see something that we've kind of talked about in the week and you can get to it, go for it.
Mark, one other thing that has been a pleasant surprise, I don't know how surprised I actually am based on what I think about the guy, but, you know, a lot was made this summer about this receiving core not having enough, and then it led to some questions about, you know, where does Terry McLaurin rank amongst the number one wide receivers in the NFL? Going into this last week, I mean, he's top five in receiving yards, top five in receiving touchdowns. What have you seen from him this year on tape that's made him, you know, impressive and on pace for a career year? And then kind of like a two-parter here for you. Philadelphia showed Washington some coverages that really limited their ability to get him the football. Do you think that's something other teams can mimic, or is it just a credit and tip your hat to Philadelphia?
Yeah, so to start with the first part of that, I think Terry's largely being Terry McLaurin. I think it's just a case of he's finally got a quarterback that can consistently deliver him a good football. And so he has made some improvements, and he talks every offseason really well about, I'm focusing on this part of my game this offseason. And I think this year he was talking about developing his ability to win more at the top of his route. Because he found that some defenders were able to key in on some stuff at the top of the route, and he has been more consistent in that this year. But generally speaking, he's just being Terry McLaurin, he's just finally got a quarterback that can get on the ball consistently, and we're seeing the results of that. So that's great for him. In terms of how the Eagles played him, it is technically replicable because they pretty much just played quarters coverage. And when you play quarters coverage and the offense has to leave guys into chip and is only going to run two or three guys out in a route, or sometimes three or four guys out in a route. But for the most part, on Terry's side of the field, it was just Terry McLaurin running a route. Essentially, that quarters coverage becomes a bracket coverage, and then Terry becomes doubled. And I think Washington kind of recognized pretty early in the game that's how it was going to play out. And they tried to use McLaurin as kind of a decoy to occupy safeties and the corner at the same time and create space in the flat. And we saw some of that, you know, where Austin Ekeler had a couple of big runs after the catch where he was just catching the ball in the flat and had tons of space and picked up some yards. And in the fourth quarter, we saw John Bates get a couple of catches in the flat. And that's all because in quarters coverage, the whole point of quarters coverage is to play four guys deep and defend against deep shots. And the downside of that is that you're going to leave space underneath in the flat. So Washington tried to take advantage of that. And obviously they didn't do a good enough job of it consistently, but there were chances there. So, yes, I think teams could try to replicate that. I will say I don't think any team is going to play the quarters match stuff that the Eagles played anywhere near as well as the Eagles played it.
Yes, I agree.
That was as good as you will see quarters match coverage played in the NFL. It was very, very impressive from Philadelphia. So you have to give them credit for that. Yeah. I would think if other teams tried to play it to that degree, they would probably have one or two busts. Mm-hmm. But there were still opportunities to get Terry the ball, and they didn't quite take them. So it's not like he was completely shut down the entire game. But I don't think it's a game plan that will be replicated very easily because Philly just played that system very well, and Washington didn't have the guys after the catch to consistently make up for the fact that they were being left tons of space underneath.
Mark, I will let you go on this, my friend. I appreciate you giving us some time. Two more here before we let you go. This defense, Mark, I've been really impressed with really over the last 6-7 weeks. I have said it all week leading up into the Philadelphia game. I mean, it all depends on how they're going to choose to stop, you know, Philadelphia's offense. Could they get away with playing 8 in the box and going man-to-man up against a dynamic duo like Brown and Smith? From what you've seen from this defense and then that Philly game in particular, where do you think they're at right now amongst, you know, teams in the NFL on that side of the football? And I guess I'm asking, do you think this is a group that once you get Lattimore in here, that maybe you can begin to lean on if you hit some offensive potholes, so to speak?
I think there's still a few pieces away in terms of being a complete unit that can really dominate a game. I think they have got some better play out of guys than they would have been expecting. And I think the development of Sanders still on the outside has been really, really encouraging. I think they really like what they're getting out of their safety play, and they should, because Jeremy Chin's come along really well recently. And that has coincided with them starting to be able to play a little bit more man coverage and put him down in the box instead of having to play him deep constantly. So that has been encouraging. And Quan Martin's been pretty good from a deep safety perspective. So they do have some pieces that are falling into place now. But the Lattimore one could be a real big factor if he plays to the level that he can do. And the rest of the defense doesn't change as a result of that, then you're looking at a secondary that you can rely on to cover multiple receivers in man-to-man coverage and take away some options, and that will enable them to then start getting into some of the blitz packages that Quinn and Witt used a ton in Dallas that they haven't really been able to get into here in Washington because they've needed those guys to cover rather than rush. So I think if Lattimore can come in, get healthy, and play to the level that Lattimore is capable of, and Samra still keeps developing on the other side, then suddenly you can start thinking about, okay, we can start lending more guys to the blitz and generating more pressure and forcing the ball out quickly and putting guys in positions to get turnovers as a result. That's the style that they want to get to. But I do still think, you know, long term, that they're probably still wanting Sanders still to move back inside, and they still need another outside corner. So they're still a few pieces away from being a truly dominant defense, but they're on the right path, and it's been encouraging to see how well they've played, especially against two pretty good teams, as we said, the Steelers and the Eagles the past few weeks.
Yeah.
The defense has probably been the better side of the football, which at the start of the season, that was certainly not the case.
100% agree with you, my friend. Mark, I appreciate you giving us some time, as always, my man. We'll do it again soon.
Of course, anytime.
That is Mark Bullock, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Mark Bullock NFL, and check out his Substack at markbullock.substack.com. Always love catching up with Mark Bullock, one of the absolute best. When it comes down to breaking down the tape for the Washington Commanders, he's been doing it for a while, and he gives you some pretty detailed film reviews on his Substack, which you can go check out at markbullock.substack.com. We'll take a quick timeout. We come back, we'll switch things over to the Harwood Wizards. A little bit of a rest after Monday night's blowout, but the common theme remains the same. Monday night, they got blown out. 9 straight losses for the Washington Wizards. I give you my thoughts on the DC family. Plus, we'll hear from Brian Keefe and Kyle Kuzma next. About a half hour left to go on the show. We will switch gears here for the final half hour of the program. We've talked all things Washington Commanders to start the program. I want to switch gears here a little bit to the NBA. And as a whole, the first month plus of the NBA season has honestly been really exciting. A lot of teams struggling out of the gates. We saw Cleveland last night play Boston in what was one of the games of the year. Cavs suffer their first loss of the season. They're 15-1. Boston off to a 12-3 start. But there are some teams that have not met expectations here in the early portion of the season. The 76ers, 2-11. The Bucks, 5-9 out the chute. Dallas Mavericks, 7-8 out of the chute. But one team that we know we didn't have a lot of expectations for is our Washington Wizards. Last year, franchise worst, 15 games won on the season. It's tough to be a Washington Wizards fan a year ago. But with 3 first-round picks in this past summer's draft, the early portion of the season, the first 7-8 games, I would say I was really impressed with the effort and tenacity that the Wizards played with as a team. All of their guys, including the 3 first-round rookies, Bob Carrington, Keyshawn George, Alex Saar, all playing really good basketball. And then you throw Bilal Coulibaly into the mix, who got off to a tremendous start to the year. And there was plenty of reason to be optimistic about this Wizards team. And there was some thought from myself, I guess. I don't know if anybody else believed this, but I thought that maybe, just maybe, they would compete all year the way that they competed the first 8 games of the year. The last 2 nights in particular, last 2 games in particular, against the Knicks on Monday and the Pistons on Sunday, were god-awful. I mean, they were terrible. talking about the Washington Wizards. Against the Knicks, granted, championship-level team. They trailed by as many as 34, and the Knicks on the night shot 56% from the field. And see, I'm not an idiot, right? I happen to think I'm pretty well-versed when it comes to the NBA, when it comes to the Wizards. No one went into this Wizards season thinking that this team was going to win games. No one went into this Wizards season judging them based off of wins and losses. So that's not what I'm doing. It's not the fact that they've lost 9 in a row. It's the fact that the last two nights in particular, and really you can go back further than that. You go back the last 4 games. The effort from this team has not been good enough. See, there's a way to tank and still be competitive, right? We've seen it done in years past. Oklahoma City did it for years, right? We've seen other teams successfully tank while keeping and maintaining that respectability. The Wizards got outclassed the last two nights by Detroit and by the Knicks. But granted, both of those two rosters better than what the Wizards have to offer. But let's just be honest about what we saw. Guys aren't running back. Guys are arguing with officials. Guys aren't hustling. Guys aren't giving maximum effort defensively. Guys aren't moving without the basketball. They look like a team that, quite frankly, didn't like each other the past two games. And the reason I say that is basketball is a sport like any other sport where you rely on your teammates. And if you think that you got fouled and you have so much conviction over a no call that you stand back and argue with an official while your man runs down the floor and proceeds to knock down a three, it's stuff like that. You would never screw over your teammates the way that the Wizards do each other at times if you genuinely liked each other. And I'm not trying to create any conspiracies or anything like that. I'm just calling it how I see it. Their effort the past two games has been embarrassing. They have been flat out outclassed, granted by two teams that are marketably better than them from a talent perspective. But here is my big picture issue. When you have a young, impressionable basketball team like the Wizards, where you got 4 guys under the age of 20 getting 25-plus minutes a night, when your veterans are not playing hard on a consistent basis, when your veterans are not setting the standard for what it is to play Wizard basketball, then you're going to have some real issues. And I think that's where we are right now with the Wizards. I don't know who I want to blame. Because let's be honest, right? It hasn't been something that's been an all-year occurrence. Feels like within the last week, we've seen it. Because I remember it was just 11, 12 days ago when they hosted Golden State and it was the return of Steph Curry, and they played great. From an effort standpoint, now they lost ultimately, but you can tell, especially when you're in person, when guys are playing hard and when they're not. And I think their effort over the past 4 or 5 games has been embarrassing, and it feels like they're at a crucial point of their season right now. They host the Boston Celtics on Friday night, a game in which they probably end up getting boat raced. You got to see the effort pick up, though. There's one way to lose. You can get blown out by 20 every night and still play hard and still compete. How do I know that the Wizards' effort was not very good over the last two games? Take a listen to Wizards head coach Brian Keefe, as passionate as I've ever heard him in a post-game media availability, pleading and apologizing damn near for the effort of his club.
I'm the leader of this team. I'm the head coach of this team. So I'll take the responsibility for the last two nights not playing up to the competitive disposition that we should be playing with, especially defensively. That will be addressed as a group, and we will get better, but that wasn't what we need to be, what our standards were, and we have to own that, and we have to look at ourselves, and we have to get better.
One thing I love about Brian Keefe is he's going to take it on the chin. He's not going to throw his players under the bus. But let's be real here, man. He better than me. Because at some point, the onus is going to fall on Brian Keefe. The players do what you allow. Guess what wouldn't happen if you didn't allow it? Guys arguing with officials, not getting back on defense, and giving up transition buckets because they want to argue and cry. You know how you solve that? Hey, Jordan. hey, Kyle, hey, whatever guilty party that exists, come sit next to me. You don't want to run back defensively? You don't want to play hard? Come sit next to me, and I'll play guys that want to play hard. See, here's the thing. I would make the argument that for a franchise that knew they were drafting three pups in the first round, for a franchise that knew they needed to see another step from their first rounder from a year ago on Bilal, the roster that they put together, you got bad veterans, man. I'm gonna say it straight up. Your veterans are not quality for this type of situation. Because, see, everybody loves Anthony Gill, right? Model citizen, practices the right way, plays hard. Why the hell am I listening to Anthony Gill when Anthony Gill can't get off the pine on a 2-win team? So when you hear from Kyle Kuzma, when you hear from Jordan Poole, it's supposed to mean something. But Kyle in particular over the past two nights has not played to a professional level. And all in all, they've got to play harder, and Friday's their next opportunity to do so. We'll see how quickly they can turn things around and how quickly the effort changes. Because if the effort doesn't change, Coach Keefe is going to have to do something to get the players' attention. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will hear from Tony Massenburg of the Monty Metal Sports Network. He will join us next to give his thoughts on what he's seen out of the 2-11 Wizards to start. That's next here on the Team 980. 301-230-0980 is the number here on the Hoffman Show. Young is in charge movement. Lynnell Willingham sitting in for Craig Hoffman. He'll be back in the saddle with you tomorrow. Right now, we go out to the guest hotline a little later than initially anticipated. Is where we find our good brother Tony Massenburg, Wizards analyst for the Monty Metal Sports Network. Make sure you give Tony a follow on the X app at Tony Massenburg. Tony, what's going on, my brother? Sorry, I'm a little bit late.
That's all right. I'll forgive you this time.
I'm about to say, look, Anthony came back from break and said he had to apologize to you because I was moving on CPT.
Yeah. He's moving on that. I know a little something about that.
I'm about
that.
To say, look, we'd all fallen victim, Tony, to a little CPT.
Right. At some point.
I appreciate you giving me some time, good brother. Obviously, you get to watch this thing a lot closer than the average Joe does. We just played Brian Keefe's post-game media availability from the other night. He walked off of the podium, Tony. He's coached this team for 52 games. If you go back to last year, I don't think I've ever remembered him being that ticked off at the podium. Why do you think he was so upset, Tony, and what have you seen from the effort of the Washington Wizards here over the past three or four nights?
Well, right now they're getting, Brian Keefe talked about, physicality. He's brought that up the last three games. He's brought that up in his post-game press conference where he talks about, this team having to address the physicality. They're getting beat on the boards. They're giving up a lot of points on offensive rebounds to other teams. They're getting outscored in points in the paint. And those things are the things that win you basketball games. And so it's one thing to lose the basketball game because maybe, the other team shot the ball well or maybe their superstars had a great night or whatever. And it's another thing to get manhandled a little bit. And that's what, physicality is. It's moving people against their will. And right now the Wizards are dealing with teams basically being more physical than they are, particularly in the paint. And that's a problem. That's a problem right now.
Tony, you played in the league a long time, man. These situations as a veteran are always tough. And any veteran on this team, I would have to imagine, Tony, understood the assignment coming into the start of this year. It's a team that's not really going to be judged by wins and losses, but how you compete. And then if they're able to establish an identity by season's end, as you look at this team 13 games in, Tony, where do you think they are relative to establishing that identity? And what do you think is the biggest thing that must change in order for the effort to become more consistent? Because I continue to believe, Tony, and I understand you can only be so honest with the answer that you give me. You're going to do your best to be politically correct. I'm going to say it straight up and down. The AAU basketball circuit is something that I'm very familiar with. High school basketball, very familiar with college. When guys, this culture of the NBA, of guys not running back on defense because they're arguing with an official off of a no call. When you got a young, impressionable team like the Wizards, they got four dudes 20 or younger playing big-time minutes. You simply can't have stuff like that. Are we close to seeing potentially Brian Keefe start pulling guys for their lack of effort? Because I think that's where we're at right now, 13 games in.
Well, I can't speak for Coach Keith in that regard, but what I can tell you is that this is a learning process for this team, particularly a team that's young. When you are trying to find your way in the NBA as a rookie or sophomore player, and you essentially you have a core of young talent that's getting significant minutes, there are going to be a lot of lessons that they got to learn along the way. And it started off pretty good when you talk about the energy and the effort that they put forth. But at some point, being young and having energy is not enough, because the NBA is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And so what you did last night may not work the next night. And so you have to get to that place where you understand that there are certain things you have to bring on a nightly basis. The effort, playing physical, regardless of, you know, how big and strong you are. You know, just because you're not as strong as the guy or as big as the guy you're competing against doesn't mean that you can't be physical. You know, basketball is a physical game, and the nature of it is something that if it's not in you, you know, ingrained in your personality, then it's something you have to learn how to be. And a lot of times something like that is not as easy as learning plays, you know, in the playbook, or learning certain things on a basketball court as far as spots to go or box out techniques or you know, post moves. Physicality is an attitude, yeah. And it's something that requires a tremendous amount of energy, and it requires dedication, and that's something that you have to learn how to do when you talk about playing an 82-game schedule. We're still very early in the season, and that's one of the lessons that's going to be learned. And there are plenty more lessons that have to be learned before this young team, or these young players can you know, ascend to the point where they call themselves veterans in the league. Veteran players understand what's expected. Unfortunately, these guys, these young guys, they don't know what's really expected because they've never experienced it before. And so now they're starting to see, like, there are levels to this. I say it all the time. And as you continue to play each game, you have to take something from each game that you play and each stretch of the season, and you learn from it and you apply it to the next stretch. And right now we're in the first quarter of the season, and now they're getting to that point where they're realizing just how physical, just how much energy, and just how much energy is required on a nightly basis to be competitive in this league.
I agree with you 100%. It is going to be a learning lesson every night. You have to see, you know, some of the best across the NBA night in, night out. You saw, you know, a championship contending team in the Knicks on Monday night. Doesn't get any easier Friday when you play host to the Boston Celtics. Seeing some quotes coming out of today's practice, Jordan Poole described it as super chippy and super physical. Good thing to hear when you hear a team struggling with physicality. When you look at Jordan Poole in particular, Tony, I gave him an omission a little bit for last year, coming to a new city for the first time, for the second time in his young career, in acclimating to life in D.C. while also being in the public eye for the incident with Draymond Green. That was a lot on his plate. I think this year, being comfortable in his own skin, getting put in position where he's the primary ball handler a lot of the times. You've seen him reap the benefits of having the ball in his hands more. He's shooting the ball efficiently from three as well as from the field. And then the defensive effort, I'm pretty impressed with. 2.1 steals per night amongst the league leaders in the NBA. What have you seen from Jordan Poole here through the first 13 games, Tony?
Well, everything that you just highlighted, particularly on the defensive end, I've been impressed with his offensive efficiency. He's been very efficient when you look at the way he scored points and the fact that he's also found, you know, figured out how to involve his teammates in the process, you know, of scoring buckets. Now, you know, again, against the, you know, the Knicks, he didn't have a particularly good game. That's been one of his, you know, low points, if probably the lowest amount of points he scored all year. But when you look at the, you know, the points, the games before that, I mean, he's been averaging, you know, 22 points for the most part of this season. And he's been reliable on the offensive end. And he hasn't had to take a ton of shots to really get those points. So I thought the Knicks game was, you know, a little bit of an anomaly for him because he, you know, he only had 8 points in that game. And normally you see Jordan Poole, you know, he's putting up 20 plus, you know, on a nightly basis. Like, you can count on him for that. And you can also count on him to get at least 5 or 6 assists a game. But when he doesn't score points, that's a problem. That's a problem if he doesn't score points, because he's got the ball in his hand a lot and the other guys play off of him. And so this team has come to rely on his scoring. You know, the real problem for the Wizards right now is the defense. They're giving up really high percentages. You know, the last couple of games, each team has been shooting, you know, over 50% from the field, you know, against them. And the Knicks, you know, was a prime example of what I'm talking about. The Knicks shot 50% against them. You know, I'm sorry, they shot 56% from the field and 50% from the three-point line.
Which is hard to do, Tony. Like, that's,
which is hard to do in the NBA. I mean, that's hard over the course of 48 minutes. So it says something about the fact that you're not as physical, you know, on the perimeter as you need to be. There are too many uncontested shots, because that's how teams shoot high percentages like that. And the Knicks are not, you know, the Golden State Warriors of 2016. Like, they don't have those type of shooters.
Yeah.
But if you leave guys open in this league, and if they move the ball around and you don't make the proper rotations, then somebody's going to be left open. And then the NBA, you're going to get burned no matter what team it is, because everybody can shoot the basketball when they're open. So that's where it has to get better for the Wizards. And unfortunately for them, you know, they've got to learn these lessons on the fly, and they play out right in front of us in real time. So it's good to hear Jordan Poole say today after practice that, you know, things were a little chippy, and because that's what it needs to be. Now you need to translate that chippiness, that aggressiveness that you displayed against each other in practice. You got to carry that over to the games, and hopefully we'll see a better effort against the Celtics, because if they don't, it's going to be a long night.
I'm about to say, you play around all you want. You don't play hard against Boston, you will get outclassed. You will get embarrassed. And at home, I'm sure they don't want that to be the case. Tony, I appreciate you giving me some time, as always, my brother. We catch up soon, man. I should see you Friday night, my man.
All right. I'll be there.
All good. I'll see you, Tony. Appreciate you as always.
All right.
That is Tony Mastenberg, ladies and gentlemen, analyst for Monumental Sports. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Tony Mastenberg. Always good hearing from Tony on the Washington Wizards. Tony, former player, former NBA champion in this league. He's going to keep it real about what he's seeing. Wizards got to improve their effort, because if they don't, it's going to get ugly Friday night against Boston. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show the way we do each and every day here on the Hoffman Show. Real things, real people, set in the real microphones. Next. One final segment to go here on the Hoffman Show. Youngest in charge, Wilbur, Linnell Willingham sitting in for Craig. One final day. He'll be back with you tomorrow for day two of the practice week for the Washington Commanders. And we've had an absolutely jam-packed show. Big thank you to Mark Bullock for joining the program. Big thank you to our guy Tony Mastenberg. Also thank our guy J.P. Finley, who joined us in that 5 o'clock hour. Talked a lot about the Washington Commanders here this afternoon. And my overarching thought that I opened up the show with still exists when it comes to this week. Cowboys week means absolutely nothing to me. And I hope that if you're a younger fan like myself and you understand where I'm coming from, I hope, damn it, I hope it means nothing to you too. Hope it means nothing to you too. I say that facetiously, obviously. Big game coming up for Washington. A must win, as I've dubbed it. Because if you lose to Dallas Sunday, how can folks take you serious as a legitimate playoff contender? We will see whether or not that offense is able to bounce back after the struggles they showed Thursday night against Philadelphia. We heard from Dan Quinn. We heard from Jaden Daniels. All signs point toward Jaden Daniels being healthy. The offensive line, we know. All 5 starters, full participants today in practice. So things trending in the right direction when it comes to the health of the Washington Commanders. Right now, we'll finish up the show like we do each and every day here on the Hoffman Show. Real things, real people said into real microphones. That's true. We'll start here in real things. Keep it relative to the NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys are going nowhere fast. They suffered another loss on Monday night at the hands of C.J. Stroud and the Texans. They have now lost five in a row, and they sit at 3-7. Luckily for them, not even last place in the NFC East. Cowboys legend Michael Irvin joined Colin Cowherd earlier today and had this to say about a potential offseason reunion with the Cowboys and one of their all-time greats.
And I do too. That if Shadur went to the Cowboys, Dion would accept the job.
I believe 100%. And I can tell you, good sources have told me that. Great sources have told me that. That's all I can say like that without violating anything else.
The playmate. You know I love having Steve.
Michael Irvin throwing gasoline on the fire that I tried to create earlier this summer. Before Dak was given the long-term extension, I thought the Cowboys were going to live life on the edge and not sign Dak to that long-term extension with the hopes of drafting Shedeur Sanders and then hiring Deion Sanders to be the successor to Mike McCarthy in Dallas. Looking at Dak Prescott and his cap hit moving forward, $89 million cap hit in 2025. That's absurd. $67 million cap hit year after. The dead cap, if they were to cut Dak Prescott, they'd save $60 million against the cap if they cut him this offseason, but they'd take a $150 million dead cap charge, meaning, if my math is correct, the difference between $150,000 and $61,000 is $90,000, if I'm not mistaken, right? Is my math wrong?
Say that again.
The difference between $150,000 and $61,000 is about $90,000, correct?
Yes, Linnell.
I'm about, okay, Mr. Syracuse, hey, damn.
$89,000 to be specific.
$89,000 to be specific. You're right.
Hey, look, sometimes math works on this show.
Sometimes math does work on the show, despite what the host says. If Dallas cut Dak Prescott and drafted Shedeur Sanders, with Shedeur being on the rookie contract, would the cap hit be stomachable? Would they be able to stomach that? I don't think it's a realistic shot, but boy, are the Cowboys screwed. For a team that looked like they had so much promise last regular season, things have changed drastically. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Dak Prescott is going to be the starting quarterback next year for the Dallas Cowboys. And Deion Sanders isn't going to be the head coach. But I wouldn't be surprised if that pairing, talking about Deion and Shedeur, popped up elsewhere in the National Football League. It would not stun me at all if that was the case. We'll see, though. What ultimately happens, Colorado in a really good spot right now. Big game coming up this weekend against Kansas. We'll see if they can punch their ticket to the Big 12 title game and hopefully make the college football playoff. For all you Deion haters out there, I'm sure you love the success that program is having this year. That's going to do it, though, for this Wednesday edition of the Hoffman Show. If you missed any of the program, Super Producer Anthony Haney working hard to get the podcast up and available for you. Craig Hoffman back with you tomorrow. I'm on a little bit of a vacay till Friday night. You can catch me on Overtime 6:30 to 10 over on our sister station 106.7 The Fan to keep the conversation going with me on social media. It is at NELL_BTP.